Please do take a seat. We are in this block of Isaiah. You can read chapter 40 to 55 as a one-er, as a complete block. I set that as a task for myself while I was on holiday. Just sat down and read Isaiah 40 to 55. Do that as an exercise, and you will see over and over and over God's desire for people, God's willingness to restore, God's hope, God's wish that people are put back together. And what you find is that it uses poetic language as God speaks through Isaiah, and it comes in several occasions in the form of a song. And so God is literally singing over the people. He is singing his desire. He is singing his wish. And he is expressing himself in song. And chapter 42 is the first of what we understand as four servant songs, where God just sings over his servants, sings over his people, singing his desire. It's a wonderful thing. And in that, look at the language that God uses. He sings on his servant. This is a servant who will bring justice. This is a servant on whom his spirit will rest. But these are the kinds of things that his servants will do. And he uses this evocative language. He says, a bruised reed he will not break. A smoldering wick he will not snuff out. In other words, God wants to bring us back to life. God wants to heal us. God wants to restore us. God wants us to not just be smoldering, but he wants to fan and encourage and blow and nurture us back so that we are living full flame once again. He won't write us off. We might feel broken, we might feel helpless, we may feel we're on our last dregs, that it's over. But God wants to restore and bring us back and enable us again to be part of his purposes that he had all along. Well, let's think about those two images, the reeds and the smouldering. Reeds, if you know what you're doing, you can use to build a house. You can build a boat out of reeds. But as you do that, you look at the reeds and you take the best ones. And those that are bruised, those are a bit frayed, those are broken. Well, of course, naturally, you just snap those and put those on a discard pile to be burnt later. But not God. God will even use the broken, bruised reeds to be part of building his household. What a smouldering wick. I mean, we don't use oil lamps today, but most of us can kind of get the idea. You have your oil lamp and the wick, but of course, after time, maybe the oil runs dry a bit. The wick becomes burnt and frayed and edged, and it's just smouldering. And of course, the correct thing to do, the sensible thing to do, is to snuff that out, to trim the wick, remove, discard the burnt, frazzled bits, get rid of those, have a nice, new, clean bit of wick, and start the fire afresh. But not God. God won't snuff us out and discard us, but instead we'll try and get it back to flame again, to woo it, to desire it, to burst back into full flame, to burn brightly again. Do you get the idea of how much God is for you? How much desire he has, how much willingness he has. God is for you. He won't write you off. He won't snuff you around. He won't simply discard you, but he'll find a way of getting you back on your feet. What we find in working with people out there in the community, just generally people at large, is how little they understand that God is for us. How they have no idea, no concept that God can be for us, that God can desire us to be restored. And so, whether it's testimonies up and down the country as people have been going out and bumping into people on the streets and telling them about Jesus, or whether it's people we meet in our own work through Food Bank or whatever, a common theme is that people just don't know, they have no inkling how much God is for them, how much God desires that they might be restored. And so our task is to find a way to convey that to people, to enable people to get that inkling, to discover that God is for them and wants them to be restored. One of the things that has become very clear in the cafe on Monday mornings, talking about addiction and about the difficulty, particularly with alcohol, but of course it applies to drugs as well, is that when you're caught in addiction, your world closes in, and your ability to start recovery out of addiction can only start when you get, or someone gives you, the imagination that life can be possible without the alcohol or the drugs or whatever thing you are abusing. The imagination that you can survive without. Recovery doesn't start until you get that imagination. We find people whose self-esteem is zero or in the negative, and no inkling that God is for them, that God's with them can help make it possible to survive without and therefore into recovery. But what about us? Do we realize how much God is for us? So our new key question, which will come up on the screen, is about our relationship with God. And we set these questions every few weeks, and we cycle around. And it's a relating to God question. How much do you get how much God is for us? Do you really get that in your own relationship with God? That he is for us, that he desires to restore. Start with yourself. I believe that God can sovereignly intervene in any person's life to start changing things and putting their lives back together. Do you get that? Do you get that for yourself? Now, of course, it's not saying that as I am is all fine and hunky-dory. I just need to convince myself of that. There may be stuff in your life that is hideously wrong and really does need attention. But God can work on that with you as you journey through to restoration and recovery. And then the challenge. And the challenge is an interesting one. Take some time to pause and reflect and ask God, who do you, God, say that I am? Spend some time, just find some time of quiet and pray and say to God, okay, God, who do you say I am? Now, this is not about your own ambition. It's not about, oh, I want to be a doctor or a train driver or whatever and have these wild ideas, park that for a moment. But say to God, okay, God, who do you say I am? What do you see in me? Because remember that whatever nasty coating we have acquired of dirt and mess and muck and all kinds of stuff, God can see into us. So what does God see in you? Not all the stuff that you've accumulated over the years that you're not too happy about. What does God see you? Who do you say I am? It's a bit of a quirky question because remember that Jesus asked his own followers, he said to them, who do you say I am? You'll hear that next week when Rachel brings that passage. And to go forward, absolutely our recovery, our restoration begins in realizing exactly who Jesus was and realizing what he can do in our lives. But then it's actually finding our identity, finding out who we really are in God's eyes, who we are in Jesus. And remember this one simple thing. Your ability to minister and help other people flows out of who you are in Jesus. Your ability to help people, to minister, that comes out of who you are in Jesus. So take some time to say, okay, God, who do you say I am? As I'm working out who Jesus really is. Well, the song conveys that God has a specific servant for his restoring work. He will put his spirit on him and he will bring justice. Now, when we hear the word justice, various things start triggering in our minds. And typically, it will be an equation like this. It's a legal equation. We think that there is law, and then there is breaking the law, which is crime, and that equals penalty and punishment. And that's justice, that we get our just deserts. We think of retribution. We think that so-and-so stole my whatever, and so I'm going to take their thing or take it back. Or we think that such-and-such a group blew up my uncle or my brother or my aunt, and so we're going to go and blow them up in return. Broadly speaking, you see this played out all over the world, all over the time. But here, in Isaiah, justice is different. Justice has a desire to restore. And justice will go to the people on the outermost margins and work that they might be restored. You see, strict justice, as we understand it, finishes people off. But justice in God's way finds a way to restore, to make good again, and give purpose. Two other quirky points of this servant. One is that he's going to lead a quiet revolution, not one of hype. Not the popular revolt that the crowds were expecting. It says he will not shout or cry out. Yes, the crowds will gather, but he won't play the whole crowd dynamic thing. Instead, he's more interested in the person right in front of him, and then the next person after that, and the next person after that, the person by person by person. You see, crowds do froth and bubble. They do that big time. They do that great. But we all know that after the froth and bubble, then that dissipates, and there's not much left to show for it. Whereas God's servant wants lasting, permanent change in people's lives. The other thing about the servant is that he won't fit with a religious establishment. See, Isaiah's writing into a time where the religious establishment has really kind of veered off the rails and has created an environment that puts a distance between people and God, rather than liberating people so that they can truly know God. And servant doesn't want that. Servant wants to collapse that distance. Now remember, Matthew is now writing up his story of this man Jesus and what he did, what he said, and who he was. And remember, as I said a couple of weeks ago, that by the time we get to chapters 11 and 12 of Matthew's account of Jesus, he's taken us on a bit of a journey, but in chapters 11 and 12, he is digging into the question of who is Jesus? Who is this one? And he's exploring that and unpacking that through the different stories and the people that Jesus brushes up against with. And he's conveying the answer. Excuse me. And Matthew is conveying the answer that Jesus is this special one. Jesus is this one on whom the Spirit of God rests to bring justice, sent by him. But he won't play the crowd. Crowds will gather, but he won't play the crowd dynamic thing. And he doesn't fit with the religious establishment. In fact, they are now clashing. And hence, this song of a servant recorded in Isaiah 42 is fulfilled. And that's why Matthew quotes those verses from Isaiah chapter 42. Jesus came to restore. He came to restore each and every one of us. But in restoring you, understand that it is not just about you as an individual. Yes, he wants to restore you, but understand that then you are part of something much, much bigger. The Isaiah 42 passage goes on to a bigger role of bringing lights for those who are far, far away, who don't even realize that there is a God and a God who is for them. Opening the eyes of the blind, releasing the captives from prison. This is a role for the servant to initiate, but then his people that he gathers to continue. God wants to include you in the task. The bruised reed, the smouldering wick thing, is not just for individuals, but it's collectively for his people. In the whole of the works of Isaiah, there are five occasions where he writes of a remnant. He talks about the people of Israel being decimated, being taken captive, having their towns trashed, and the people carried away into exile. But five times he says, but there will be a remnant, just a few, left behind. And from those, we can restore and rebuild. Realize that God wants to restore you, but it's not just about you. It's you in a bigger picture. And that bigger picture is not just you, it's not even just us as a church here, the Counts Street Church. It includes our friends across the road, in the lighthouse, our friends down the road, around the corner, even, dare I say, the establishment church in the rather large building further down the road. God's desire is not to snuff out, but to restore, to encourage back into full flame. so that those can be a people once again who are part of his global purposes for any and all who would be saved to be restored and put back together again. But Jesus makes it very simple for us. And he does that in a quirky little episode that we find at the end of chapter 12. We've been digging into this question of who is Jesus. There's been some argy-bargy with the establishment. There's been some more healings and some more stuff. But then Jesus' mother and the odd brother turn up to chat to him. Not quite sure why. And the message is passed to Jesus. Your mother and your brothers are here. And Jesus says something interesting. He says, oh yeah, but let's think about who really is my mother and my brother and my sister. My mother and my brother and my sister are those who do the will of my Father. They're my family. They're the people with me. Part of God's purposes, part of this restoring work. It doesn't need anything special. They don't have to come with great special stuff. They just need to get on board with what I am doing and come with me. So let us work out who Jesus is and then who we are in Jesus. And get on board. Be part of a family. Be part of a people restoring across the world.